Later this evening on Radio 4, the author Neil Gaiman is one of tonight's guests on Front Row. He'll be discussing the National Theatre's adaptation of his book, The Ocean at the End of the Lane, as the award-winning show prepares to go on a nationwide tour. We'll join him in conversation with Nick Ahad at 7.15. But now, just before our 6.30 comedy, a look ahead to a new series beginning tomorrow night.
I'm incredibly neurotic and socially awkward.
Michael Spicer returns with his semi-autobiographical sitcom.
It's not really a heightened version of myself, it is virtually me.
Maybe people don't want to get to the kitchen quickly, maybe they appreciate the amble.
Ellie Taylor plays my wife, Roberta, because my real wife isn't an actor.
Michael, it's really not up to me to keep you informed of where your foot should be.
Plus, there are special guest appearances from Michael Fenton Stevens, Matthew Horne and Sanjeev Bhaskar.
Why have you got a microwave in your office?
So please listen to the new series of Michael Spicer Before Next Door, starting tomorrow night at 11 on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
And now on Radio 4, the last in the series of Gossip and Goddesses with Granny Kumar.
OK, aunties. Thank you for coming half an hour early before today's show. And can I say how encouraging it is to see so many of you here at my first Self-Defence is No Offence class. Every woman should know how to defend herself. No man should be allowed to violate your sacred space.
Ooh, matron.
Thank you, Ummi. Yes, very funny. In a retro, deeply sexist kind of way. OK, let's start with a simple warm-up. Everyone stretch right up. Breathe in. And slowly exhale as you gently roll down to the floor.
Told you we should have done strip bingo.
Hi, hi.
Oi, oi.
Oof, oof.
Is this your way of asking me to make the tea?
It's called the osteoporosis rap, and you will be singing it one day.
God knows what Anjali Mohindra and Mylene Glass are going to think when they see us. Such elegant, tasteful ladies. You and your self-defencing Maya. I doubt I will ever shut my legs again.
Oh, matron. Oh, hi. Oh, that hurts. Oh, how am I going to do the show and not laugh at my own jokes?
Look, you've both just pulled a couple of teensy muscles. Can we stop with the melodramatic Punjabi catastrophizing? It's so... Oh, bloody hell. Anjali's here. Right, stay there. Don't move.
I'm in so much pain. Hi, hi.
Not as much as me. Oi, oi.
Oof, oof.
Rabba mera.
Found my soul sister in the car park. It's Anjali Mahindra, everyone.
Oh,
hello.
Welcome to Wembley, you gorgeous creature, you. And how wonderful to welcome a proper Punjabi courier to our show. Bale.
Bale, bale. Oh, Geeta Bhandari, MBE, co-host, and I pay for the hall.
Oh, wow.
Well, we would have welcomed you in with some bhangra dancing, but we can't move.
Ah, sorry about the shouting earlier. We have strained some intimate muscles today.
Oh.
Oh, exercising. She should have added that bit. It was Maya's fault.
No, it wasn't. I ran a self-defence class. That's a vital life skill, right, Anjali?
Yeah, totally.
Well, we both feel so much better now you're here, darling.
You are like celebrity Savlon.
Yes. The ultimate compliment. Okay, sorry, Betty. Shall we do the show while we can still stand? Are you ready?
Great.
Okay, chug of the footy.
Chalo. Wait, balle.
Oh, that hurt. Gossip and goddesses with Granny Kumar.
Gossip and goddesses with Granny Kumar. And Geeta.
Our first goddess is a triple threat. She acts, she writes, and she's Pakka Punjabi. She's lit up our screens in shows like Doctor Who, The Bodyguard, and The Brilliant Vigil, and was chosen by BAFTA's Elevate program as one of our talented rising stars. Well, she's risen and she's here. Please give a huge silver batch gida to our Anjali Mohindra. Oh.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Oh. Have a laddu or a samosa, please, please.
Eat something. You're so thin. She's too thin, Hannah.
Sorry, Anjali. Geeta, auntie, can we keep off the body shaming, please?
It's called force feeding and it's traditional.
Ah, well, how else do we show her that we adore her? Sorry, darling. Are we overwhelming you with too much auntie love?
No, it's great.
You get it at home?
Yeah, I miss it.
She's used to it because you grew up in a Punjabi family in Nottingham, isn't it?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Nottingham, where was Papa from?
My dad was born in Kenya, actually, in the British colony in Kenya. And then moved to Coventry first when he was about three, and then London, and then settled in Nottingham when he met my mum.
Where did he meet your mama?
They met for the first time on a sort of blind date, and I think they'd had a few options before that, and then when they came together, they were like, oh, okay, there's fireworks sparking here. And my mum was born in Punjab and moved to England when she was 18.
So quite romantic meeting.
Yeah, in a way.
Parents.
Old school version of like Tinder, I suppose. Matchmaking.
No, you were also a bit of a tomboy, you said. Is that because you were made to wear your brother's clothes?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't made to. I just really wanted to be him. So I wore a lot of his clothes.
Oh, dear.
I loved wearing my husband's hand-me-down dhotis. All that air around the undercarriage. It's very good for you. It's very liberating. Oh, I suppose it depends what got handed down to you, Anjali. Was it something trendy like a Nirvana T-shirt or an auntie present like a glittery tank top or trousers with bells on them?
There were some questionable jumpers, for sure, yeah, and some very sort of long jeans. But
do you think also dressing up as a boy was something to do with having the freedom of a boy?
Yeah, boys had a lot more power. They were sort of referred to for their opinions. I could sense a lot of that going on, and I was like, I'm not having that. Mm. I want to be like him too.
Totally understand that. But also, you ended up spending a long time in germs. Oh, no, hang on. Chutney on my notes. In Germany. How the heck did you end up there?
My dad was in the British Army for a while, and then he worked for them as a civilian, and we got posted out to Germany when I was about 8 or 9 years old. So I lived there for 4 years.
Not many Punjabis there, I imagine.
No, actually, in my school, I was the only ethnic minority kid for quite a while.
That must have been quite tricky, huh? Did you feel isolated?
I did a little bit. I think I was coming to terms with my own sense of otherness in a way. Definitely felt a little bit alien. But I think that's a bit of a superpower when you grow up and you realise there's something quite different about you.
Absolutely. Your difference is actually the thing that makes you rise to the top enough.
Yes.
But didn't you once tell your mum off for speaking Punjabi in Asda?
Yeah, I did. It's when we moved back to England. I just would hate either of them encountering my schoolmates in case people were like, oh, she is Indian. Because I'd go around trying really desperately to like get sort of British identity things in. Like, yeah, my dad loves Only Fools and Horses, watches it every Friday. They think it's on a Thursday. I'm like, he has a video, watches it on that.
We didn't want to be picked on. We wanted to fit
that,
in.
Right?
And also because we weren't made to feel very welcome, you know?
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Hey, but then you got accepted into a very famous Carlton TV workshop, and in Nottingham. That must have been fabulous, darling. What was it like? Tell us.
Oh, I loved it. It was like, I felt like I got the golden ticket and was I had to audition a couple of times to get in.
But were your family encouraging when you got in, or did you get the old hi Bisharam, do you want to kill me with shame routine?
No, I actually didn't get that. I got the, oh, you get your acting from me, you know.
Oh, then, they claimed the talent.
Yeah. Very quickly, yeah.
Actually, you know, I so relate to the whole Asda incident, but it's a phase a lot of us second gens go through. So I wanted to ask you, when did you really start feeling proud of your heritage?
I think it was in my sort of mid-20s, actually, and had something to do with dating an Indian guy. I'd find myself telling everybody, anybody from any background who would ask how me and my Indian boyfriend had met, I'd find myself being like, oh, I used to date white guys, you know? Because I think there was an internalised racism going on inside me as well. I felt like I wanted people to know that it wasn't an arranged marriage, which is just ridiculous, but says so much about the things that I'd picked up on as a child.
I'm normal, really.
Yeah, I'm normal, really, you know, all that.
I was so thrilled when I saw you playing Rani Chandra in the Sarah Jane Adventures.
Oh, we love that. Oh, it hurts when I clap.
Me too, Hannah.
But tell us about Sarah Jane. How did you get that part?
I'd been put up for this part of Rani, who was a 14-year-old schoolgirl. I was 18. It was my first audition. And I was like, oh, what the hell? I'll just go in wearing clothes that are you know, like what a kid wears. So I wore a knitted jumper, an Alice band, like little girly trainers. I looked ridiculous. And if I saw any of my cool schoolmates on the way to London, I literally would have cringed.
I'm normal again. Yeah.
And so I went in and there were loads of legitimately young kids, 12, 13, 14-year-olds sat in the waiting room. And I was like, this is a joke. This is not going to happen. But something worked and, yeah, got that job. And
it was amazing. I remember watching it and I remember thinking, this is so progressive for young brown women. You had a long connection with Doctor Who, right?
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Some years after playing Rani, I then played an evil villain called Queen Scythera.
Oh, in Doctor Who.
We barely recognised you under all that makeup, you know, even they made you look so ugly.
Yeah, it's called prosthetics, no?
It is, yeah, and they smell like the boys' toilets.
No. Oh.
They're, like, really awful. Like, we.
But now, darling, would you do a Bollywood movie? You could wear a lovely sari and look normal.
Silly Moogita. Yeah. Have you seen Anjali's body of work? Huh? Huh? She was in a big movie called Munich, Edge of War. She starred opposite Rob Lowe in ITV drama Wild Bill. Oh. Rob Lowe, so handsome.
So handsome.
And she was in American series Beaver Falls. No, it was a comedy about an American summer camp.
Thank God for that.
Oh, and don't forget Surgeon Tiffany Doherty in that fabulous submarine thriller, Vigil.
I mean, it looked very cramped in there.
The female bunk scene, the dorms that Saran and I were staying in, that was, yeah, it was very intimate. Mm. She had to lose one of her tablets and I remember being like, there's nowhere to hide anything. It's all just so cramped. We're literally like on top of each other in the only space there is.
Well, it's like being in an Indian family, I suppose. You had a lot of practice.
It did feel like being in the back of my mum and dad's car on the way to Hindi school.
In the Datsun Sunny. Somebody lie on the back shelf.
Yeah.
Oh, poor you, locked off with all those sweaty men. Sorry, I got distracted there. We also loved you, of course, in the massive TV hit The Bodyguard, where you played Nadia Ali. Oh,
thank you.
That was so gripping. Your role of Nadia Ali was very complex and challenging, wasn't it, darling?
Yes, it was. The slightly complex thing that the show was doing by, at one point, painting the white politician as a possible suspect in funding the terror cells that Nadia had come from. Mm. I hoped would be enough to make it really interesting, but the show was later accused of perpetuating Islamophobia.
Because you were playing a terrorist.
A terrorist, which, I guess doesn't help the cause at all and something that I could understand. But what's brilliant about that show is it has sparked so many really healthy conversations about representation of Muslims.
Yes.
We really needed it. And I think it will only happen when something like that happens and people can have a real reaction to it.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's very hard being expected to represent a whole community. How do you cope with that, Betty? Because it must come with a few roles that you play, no?
It can do, yeah. I think as I'm becoming more experienced, I'm learning to be a lot more diligent and ask those really difficult questions, because sometimes you're not aware that you're about to step onto something that might be a little bit tricky or might not be your place to talk about a subject, for example. Mm. I think there's a really healthy conversation going on with a lot of us actresses in the industry now and actors to make sure that, the right people are playing the right roles.
With this power and strength to say that.
Yeah.
We love saying no.
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 I love being an old woman. You say no all the time.
Nay.
Is that why you started writing now, so you can have some control over your narrative? Because God knows I need some over mine.
I can feel the tension in the room.
Yep.
Yes, definitely.
Well, we're very excited that you have optioned Sophia Daleep Singh's story, The Suffragette Princess. We know all about this. We had lovely Anita Anand on our show who wrote the book.
Yes, and you know all about her, I'm sure.
But very few people do. That's the point.
Mm. That's the thing. She was such a major player in the suffragette movement, but people don't know about her. She wasn't in that major film that was out recently. Oh. And it's about time. We put her on the map.
Yes.
And it's so important to reclaim our hidden histories and discover the sisters who came before us.
Will you be playing her, darling? You'd be marvellous. I can see you in it, all dressed up, wearing those lovely frocks. Mm.
I'm not sure. To do the piece real justice, I think I have, and to do Sophia justice, I think I have to write her completely objectively from an open mind. Otherwise, I think if I have myself in mind for the role, I'll just keep nudging her character towards me. Suddenly
does
she'll be from Nottingham.
Does she have a Nottingham accent? I think she does.
Yes, exactly. And a bit of a tomboy in her brother's clothes. Yeah. So,
but seriously, you would be wonderful in the part. Of course you should.
You would.
I might audition myself later. Maybe you can be on the panel.
Anjali Betty, we will watch anything you are in. May your star keep rising and we are all right behind you. Please, ladies, let's show our love for Sadi Kuri Anjali Mohindra. Oof, I up a bit, down a bit. That's the sweet spot. Go on, dig those thumbs in, girlfriend. You don't mind giving me a back rub, do you, Anjali Betty?
No, not at all. No.
Oh.
Of course she doesn't. She's a good Punjabi girl and you're doing my feet next, aren't you?
Hi, everyone. Look who's here. It's the fabulous Mylene Clark.
Oh, hello. Lovely to meet you.
Oh, welcome, Mylene. Geeta Bhandari, MBE and co-host. So honoured to have your talent grace our humble show.
So honoured to be here, ladies. Oh, this is lovely.
Darling Mylene, I'm so sorry about being bent double and half naked, although all the best parties start that way, don't they? It's just Geeta and I have some achy, shaky bones today.
Yes, because Maya made us do a self-defence class this morning.
For your own good, I was trying to empower you all. Do excuse me, sisters, just going to sound check your mics. Obviously, all I'm good for around here.
Teenagers, huh?
She's 22.
Anyway, our ladies group can't wait to meet you, Mylene. So pass me my bra and let's get on with the show.
Gossip and goddesses with Granny Kumar. Gossip and goddesses with Granny Kumar.
And Geeta.
So, ladies, our next goddess has so many strings to her bow, it's a good job she's actually a genius on the violin. She sings like an angel, she acts like a boss, she survived a stint in the jungle and studies astrophysics. Impressed, you should be. All hail to the wonderful, multi-talented Mylene Clark! Oh.
Please, sit, darling, sit. Can I offer you a deep-fried snack?
Yes.
Oh, please, please eat. That's a samosa there, vegetarian. Mind your fingers, because I know your beautiful hands are insured for £1 million, aren't they, darling?
My hands are insured. Mm. It's funny, isn't it? Because the more I try to be careful with them, the more I end up banging into things.
Oh. £1 million, can you imagine?
But of course, because you come from a long line of musicians, isn't it? On your father's or mother's side, or is it both?
On my dad's side, there's 6 generations of classical musicians.
6 generations?
Yeah, there's a lot.
Explain the family tree.
So, I never met my grandfather, but I was given his violin, so that's how I started learning the violin. And then on the piano side of things, I don't remember starting the piano because it's just one of those things, it's just omnipresent.
And who was it who forced you to practice by threatening you with a shoe? Or maybe that's just an Indian thing.
No, not at all. No, so because I've got a Filipino mom.
Ah.
So, the threat of the flip-flop.
Oh, yes. Well, your hands are your fortune. My breasts were mine. Yes, back in 1956, I insured them for 1 million rupees. Sadly, as they've got lower, so has the insurance. Maya, you wanted to ask a question.
Oh, sorry, am I allowed?
I think she's still annoyed with us.
Mylene, you grew up in Norfolk. When I went there in a school trip, people fell off their bikes staring at me. Did that ever happen to you?
Daily. I mean, Mum came over as an NHS nurse. She came over to join the NHS. You know, to then be born into somewhere like Norfolk as a mixed race girl, they would actually ask me, what are you? Not where are you from, what are you? Because they just hadn't...
Bloody annoyed, I hope you said.
I didn't really know myself because I wasn't Filipino and I wasn't white. So yeah, people would fall off their bikes with me as well.
But Anjali also knows that feeling from her days in Germany, that sticking out like a sore thumb, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you explain yourself all the time.
Especially when you're younger, it can really hurt, can't it? Because you're not quite sure how to answer it and...
Well, figuring it out for yourself.
Yeah.
It makes you determined. It makes you very determined.
But look how far you travelled. From Norfolk to graduating from the Royal Academy of Music.
Yeah. And just at 20... You were offered a role in the West End musical Miss Saigon, Hannah. Your family must have been so proud.
So proud.
It was my first job out of college 2 days later. So, yes.
Two days after college.
My family were very, very happy.
And relieved.
Very relieved. And then came out of Miss Saigon. I was doing backing vocals for Katie Lang and Michael Crawford and Robbie Williams.
Oh, yeah.
And that's when Hearsay came up.
Oh, we loved it, didn't
my
we?
Be there,
pure and simple.
I'll be there for you.
Thank you, Miley. Somebody sang it properly.
I struggle with the words too. It's okay.
I can tell you're speechless at how good that was. But what an adventure, Miley, because that all started with a reality talent show, didn't it?
It did. I think people looked down on you because you didn't come what they consider the conventional way. Mm. Like the first performance we ever did as a band, we were booed. Aww. And it was at the Brits. They didn't think we'd earned our right to be there. I get it. We hadn't maybe performed as a group for that long, but we'd certainly earned our stripes. Some had been singing in clubs. I'd been working at music college and then in the West End. We had trained to do the job, but it just wasn't accepted because they didn't like the route that we'd come. And now it's the only route.
It's the only route.
The tail's wagging the dog. You can train, you can have a job, and then you actually then have to perform on the show to get the visibility.
Indeed. Yeah. Maya.
But then you went on to release two award-winning piano albums, Moving On and Music for Romance.
I wanted to go back to something I felt more familiar with. But ironically, it's almost that situation of not knowing where you fit in. It happened all over again. They call you crossover, and the purists don't like you crossing over. And then the pop world just thinks you're classical and you're Mozart.
No, I love the fact you mix up the genres. You said you are a Mozart and Madonna girl. Now, what is the best music, do you think, for romance, Mylene? Because that's one of your specialist areas.
Ooh.
Something slow and smoochy, or something fast so they hurry up and finish?
Oh, you want the minute waltz then, in that case.
Minute? I'd be lucky to get a minute.
Or maybe Flight of the Bumblebee, that's quite fast. Just pop that on.
Oh, Miley, I just remembered, you were in I'm a Celebrity, weren't you? We loved that show. What was it like?
Oh, please tell me you didn't have to eat kangaroo testicles.
I absolutely loved it. I really did love it. It was a time of my life, no phones. Just being able to, I don't know, just take that time. And just felt like being like at Boy Scouts, just making fires and doing challenges together. So I really enjoyed it. And I think that's because I had no wish to cook, because all the fights happened around the fire. Aww. But I wanted to make the fire. The irony is then it became a bit Lord of the Flies, and David Guest said, I only want Marlene to divvy up the portions. Again, ironic, because my Asian auntie would have been so proud that it was me that was doing the rice. But I never do it at home. But I loved every minute. I loved the challenges. And obviously there was a whole thing with the white bikini that I had no clue about.
I was going to ask you about.
Well, I had no clue that it was going on.
Well, you caused quite a storm in that bikini, Hannah.
Well, that's before breastfeeding. Before breastfeeding three babies. You see, everyone's like, you know, did you feel objectified and everything else? And I'm like, I'm glad that there is just some footage that I can remember they were by my chin once.
Well, you know, after that program, many of us silver bats, we went out and we bought that bikini.
We did. Oh. It didn't look quite the same on us, though. More like two bits of string around a leg of lamb. But Mylene, as well as being an amazing musician, you have presented so many programs. The One Show, Loose Women, your Classic FM show, and you've got three lovely children.
And you've written a new book, haven't you?
I have. I feel really proud of it, actually. It's called They Don't Teach This at School. And it's just full of all those things that you've sat with your girlfriends and you've said, God, I wish they'd taught this at school, because I learned Pythagoras and the cells of a plant, but I didn't learn to fix my washing machine. I didn't learn basic first aids. I didn't learn my way around a fuse box. Just all those things that you need in life.
That's such a good idea, isn't it? But you're so busy, darling. How do you manage? Are you like one of those Hindu goddesses, lots of arms and lots of juggling?
I've got a good community around me. I've got a good tribe.
Mm-hmm.
Like you women, you know, it's like there's so much power. And I love that I'm sitting here now in a room with women. I love that. And I think when I became a single mom, it was my tribe that lifted me up. It was my girlfriends I surrounded myself by. And the fact that I've got two girls, I want them to see.
Oh, yes.
The, you know, the women that I've got around me.
Of course. Oh, now we always ask for a question from our silver bat ladies, and they've all written one down, and I'm going to pick one out from the from the washing up bowl. Couldn't we find something nicer? Never mind.
So I expect it's going to be about your wonderful charity work, Miley, with Childline and the National Foundation of Youth Music, or maybe even a question about screenwriting, Anjali. What is it?
So the question from Usha Patel is, please ask both ladies what is best remedy for groin strain?
Yes, groin strain.
Okay, any ideas, either of you?
You need one of those little wheels. Like you roll a wheel.
Oh, yeah, I thought you meant roll the wheel on the groin. No.
I wouldn't recommend that. You put it on the floor and you like just roll. I'm doing the action. No one can see what I'm doing here.
So
you just got to get the movement back in.
We could make do with one of those with a rolling pin.
Yes. Wow. Yeah. Yes.
There you go, rolling pin. Anjali?
Maybe a hot bath with some Epsom salts or something.
Oh, that would be nice. Look, now we're out of time and you didn't even ask Mylene about studying astrophysics. Oh. Mylene, quick, what is it? I'll cut the groin bit out in the edit.
My dad was in the Navy and he was really intent on teaching me about astronomy. It used to be about how the sailors could steer by the stars. So I like the romanticism of it all. Mm. Then I just love the concept that you're looking up, you're looking at something that probably just isn't even there, 100,000 light years away, and it doesn't even exist anymore, but you can still see it. And that's how I just got into it. And I just think that it's just a fascinating subject that we often forget to look up. So that's how I got into it. And then I used to hang out with the most incredible guy called Professor Colin Pillinger, and he sent one of the first rovers to Mars. And what I loved about it is, in such an English way, he built most of it in his shed with his cat, sort of climbing over all the parts. And he named it the Beagle 2. And I just thought the whole thing was just a lovely entry point rather than an intimidating one, when you just imagine that people get into astronomy because maybe wanting to be an astronaut or wanting to be a scientist. I just love the romance behind it and the idea behind it.
And what a lovely message. Look up.
Look up. Chin up. Keep your chin up.
Chin up. Aim high. The very definition of brains and beauty, Mylene Klass. And both of you, utter goddesses, please show our love to the heavenly Mylene Klass and the divine Anjali Mohindra. Thank you for coming. Thank you. Bye, Anjali. Bye, Mylene. Ouch! It hurts when I wave.
Me too.
Okay, that's enough. All you've both done is complain all day when I was trying to do something nice and life-saving for you all. Never again.
No, Maya, don't walk off. Look! Who is that strange man approaching our beloved guest in a threatening manner?
How dare he invade their sacred space?
Oh, matron. Sorry. Well, thanks to Maya, we know what to do.
Aunties, assemble!
Hiya! Hiya!
Can I just say, I am so proud of you all. Here, ice pack for you, Geetha auntie.
Thank you, Beti.
And hot water bottle for you, Ummi.
Oof, I just put it straight down my cleavage, darling. Lovely.
I mean, the way you all saw off that creepy guy and saved our guests. Poor bloke didn't stand a chance. See? My self-defence class was worth a few little aches and pains. I think we can all stand a little taller today, sisters.
Oh yes. Thank you, Beti. Thank you so much.
Just going to post some more photos on my socials. My timeline's gone crazy.
I hope Mr. Agnihotri is going to be okay. I know we asked him to pretend to be a stalker, but I don't think he was expecting quite so much kicking.
Oh, he's fine. I just paid him. And in fact, as he has quite a serious foot fetish, he said he quite enjoyed himself.
Oh, well, that was lucky.
Wasn't it? Oh, the things we do for our youngsters, eh?
Oof, I'm cold.
I'm boiling. Want to swap?
Yes. Ready?
Hi.
Oi.
Oof.
Dabba mera.
Gossip and Goddesses with Granny Kumar was written by Meera Sayal. The music was by Sanjeev Bhaskar. Ummi was played by Meera Sayal, Geetha by Harvey Verdi, and Maya by Umbreen Razia. The producer was Liz Anstey, and it was a CPL production for BBC Radio 4.
Well, we've cosy comedy later here on Radio 4.